Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Ryan.
I'm David.
And we're talking about the importance of lists and list building in the game of War Machine. For my part, I think the importance of lists has generally been exaggerated in the game. Building a list is kind of, a lot of people view it as an exercise of self-expression and, you know, treat it as very pivotal to the game. And it's certainly the factor that you have the most control over versus the actual playing of a game and having to contend with an opponent. List building, you control every aspect of it and you make a thing, and it's a part of the game you can play with no opponent and that you have perfect control over. And where that lands on the importance scale,
I think, Alex, you're down on it. You think it's
I'm
low.
I'm super down on it. Yeah, I don't think list building is a very important part of this game.
I think I disagree a little bit. I disagree like a five, and I think David disagrees more higher than that.
Yeah, I think it's almost the entire game.
Sure. Yeah, you want to state your case, because I think I'm in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, so what I'm not saying is that player skill doesn't matter, or train doesn't matter, or dice don't matter. Like, all of these things do go into a game, but if we're talking about like two players of the highest level caliber who have played the matchup a billion times and know all the ins and outs and the perfect positioning and the perfect way to mitigate dice and all of that stuff, where the factors are that are up to random chance are very, very low. I just assume that I'm going to be playing on that level and that my opponent also brings that that same skill level. Then, like, what decides the match? Well, what did you bring and how does that interact with what I brought? And that's just how I generally approach the game. In general, I don't think that the deciding factors of the game are going to have anything to do with the randomness of the dice or the terrain or the mission. I mean, they can, but those are going to be outlier games that you lose. For the most part, everything's going to come with like what you brought and how it matches up. You can do most of this game in the dojo in your head.
I'll agree with that to a certain extent, because you can run through positioning and, you know, sort of iterate playing the game in your head. But I don't think it's, you know, applying, like, taking two cards and applying their abilities in a mechanical fashion. Like, that doesn't actually occur, and most printed abilities can be mitigated or dictated by the application of positioning.
Yes. So you think positioning is the dictating factor of a game?
Yeah.
I think what happens on the board probably accounts for more of the win-loss than the list.
Yep.
So my outlook is this. I think list building is actually an important part of the game, like anything else. Knowing your dice math, knowing threat ranges, knowing what to do on the board is important. I kind of look at it as like a sports team. Like, you're trying to build the best five-man roster in a basketball game. There's mistakes that you can make in list building. And I think we see it when we dojo all the time. We shoot back lists back and forth, and immediately you just go, oh, I don't think those scouts or behemoths in there. I think if you put Ulans in there, the list would be better.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly you go, yes or no. So there is, most of the time, factual optimization in a list. And that's important to do when you're looking to bring something to the table. Like, if you have a caster, the list is going to bring his abilities, his or her abilities, to the forefront in the most efficient way. And in that sense, list building is extremely important. Like, if you're playing a good caster, but you have a list that either sucks resources from them or doesn't synergize well or has like four jacks that all want three focus and you can't feed it, that list is bad and you're probably going to lose games on the table. So yeah. There's, for me, list building is more of a binary thing. Either you did it well or you didn't. But that only gets you, like, to the table.
Yeah.
Like, I think I have the exact opposite opinion. I assume my opponent built a list that does something, like, well. Like, he built his list efficiently. I built my list efficiently to handle a wide array of matchups. But there's too many matchups and too many things in the game to say that list build X is going to beat list build Y, because you can also play them differently and there's too many interactions. So I think the importance of list building is bringing something to the table where you're confident you can beat anyone in front of you.
I'll agree with the list building is binary thing. The importance of dojo and the importance of list building for me is like going in and spending a lot of time obsessing over like nuanced combos and stuff like this. I don't see as a very productive exercise in War Machine. There are, I guess what I've been calling list building paradigms, and there are paradigms that function and paradigms that don't. And once you're within a functioning paradigm, variation makes very little difference. Like an example, My friends sent me in Mark II so many Kruger 2 lists. And what do you think of this Kruger 2 list? And what do you think of this Kruger 2 list? And they were all like some variation on either a big full module unit or two half module units and like 2 to 4 heavies and maybe some support lights. And it's like, I know these are different models, but these are all the same list. They're all in the same paradigm. They're all attempting to do the same thing. The variation almost doesn't matter. I know this paradigm works. You bring it to the table. You just play what you're comfortable with. You'll have a game. Like for me, spending a lot of time poring over those minute differences doesn't matter. Once you're inside a list build archetype or paradigm that works. And there's something to be said for attempting to discover new paradigms that work. But like for the most part, once you've got something that works good enough, just refocus all your energy to playing the game, optimizing tactics, that sort of thing.
I feel like we're talking in very abstract, such that I'm having difficulty following it. Like, what are concrete examples? Because I have one. Here's what I think. If you have a Windwall caster, you automatically beat Krios 1. That is something that is like,
and I will 100% disagree with that.
Yeah, you would. And that's fine.
You would.
Yeah.
That's fine. But I'm saying that, yes, there are. So what does that mean? Like, is Krios 1 going to lose every single game to a Windwall caster? No, but he should. So outside of like extremely improbable outliers, if the Windwall caster is playing exceptionally well and knows what's going on, and the Krios 1 player is playing exceptionally well and knows what's going on, that ability trumps what he wants to do in most cases. Although, and that's whether you build for attrition or for, especially for the assassination thing. But that is something in my head where I don't have to play that. I just know it. Like this ability gets around everything that he could possibly do.
Well, everything he could possibly do to Vlad with certain types of guns within a certain range.
But he could also, then he plays for attrition.
But he can't kill anything that's in Windwall.
So this is part of why I think like the dojo thing, you can't, you know, not everything's decided in dojo. One, you can play differently. Mm-hmm. Like if the Krios player is just trying to execute a standard assassination plan, the Krios player is an idiot. Second, like
good job, Krios player.
Yeah, you heard it. players are idiots.
There's no standard way a game of War Machine resolves. Like, you know, you don't push your guys straight across the board and they slam into each other. Like, you know, that's sticking to a plan and not deviating from it, or sticking to a standard plan and not deviating from it. But I mean, like, you can't really treat that as informative of the whole. And if you expect that or anticipate that and treat that as good play, like you're going to get
burned.
What is
this alternate plan that Krios is going to do? Like, oh, you're going to play differently. Like, so, you can't play differently. That is what he does really well. So
sure
if you're
can.
Not doing that,
yeah, you
then you're doing something suboptimal and you're just going to get crushed.
No, because that's exactly what I'm disagreeing with, this notion of optimality, or that there's some standard plan of optimality. What playing optimally is in that situation is deviating from your normal plan and reallocating resources, probably attempting to play a more standoff game against like fringe heavies or something like that, or you know, saving the feet to kill infantry and wiping a specific part of the
doesn't
board.
Doesn't that just assume that, like, I'm just going to let you do this alternate thing?
No, you're not. And that's what I'm saying. That's where the game is. The lists themselves and whether
right.
you've built, how you've built your list doesn't matter a tremendous degree inside of that.
Except that I have this one tool in that your most powerful thing you don't get to do.
You have an early game advantage, but I'm going to play this out in my head really fast. Let's assume Vlad 1 is Vlad Behemoth Destroyers, Devastator.
He can
and
fit 4 heavies in his Windwall,
right.
generally.
4 heavies, 3 that shoot, and Rifle Corps.
Sure.
Krios is Reckoner, Redeemer, something else, Zealots, Eris, Support, stuff that shoots. What Krios is going to do, he's not going to come up and try to feed on you. What he's going to do is he's going to take his Redeemers, AoE into your Rifle Corps, and try to attrition out the Rifle Corps. You respond by charging in heavies or trying to shoot Redeemers.
Mm-hmm.
If you stay in the Windwall pocket, he plays for scenario. Eventually, you have to spend focus, and that's when he uses the feat. Now, you have a huge advantage early game because of Wind Wall, but then by no means against a skilled Krios player is he out of the running. Like, there's never... I think it's rare to even have a 75% advantage matchup. If you're playing
I would
list
agree with that.
That's good. Like, if you're playing a bad list that just can't do certain things, then yes.
Like, I think that I can lose that game, but it's because it's going to be because I fucked up.
Well, ugh.
Or the Krios player played well.
The Krios player isn't just going to try and assassinate you. And, you know, you say it's their strongest tool, but it's not their strongest tool in this situation.
No, they can also assassinate your army.
Yeah. Exactly. Well,
or win on scenario. Or there's lots of things that happen in a War Machine game, I think. And to get back to the point of list building.
Sure.
Yeah.
The goal for me is just to have a list that I am confident personally in to bringing that list. Now, I think when we talk about this, you're always very confident in your own army and not so confident in the opponents, which is a good mindset to have.
Sure.
I think that's just at some point we're kind of saying the same thing. You're happy enough into your list to play into anything. And it's just a bit of a hyperbolic response. And that's the only thing you want to have in list building.
Well, that's not true, actually. You know, I make, in a two-list environment, I make pairs, and I make the pair that I think is going to, what I expect to see at the tournament, what it's going to work into best. And there are some outlier casters or things where I'm like, if I see this, like, I'm going to lose. If it's of a player of a certain caliber who is playing the list, like, I'm probably going to lose. And I will try to do a different play style, and I will do everything in my power to win that game and eke out the win. But in my head, I'm like, this is a losing proposition. Like,
sure. Yeah. And I think at that point, we agree.
Unless he messes up, I'm going to lose.
Yeah. I think Alex and I, our point, though, is I think in a game of War Machine, it's rare that an opponent doesn't mess up slightly. And that's why I'm saying list building, you have to be able to take advantage of that. There's what your list always wants to do is have a major win condition. Like most
asking a question.
Yeah, or whatever it's gonna do, like Synergy Griffin spam or Kane 2 being Kane 2 or Haley 2 getting an extra turn on her feet. They always want to try to do that one thing, and the opponent's gonna do the one thing too. List building, you want to be able to counter what the other person's doing and also have other options to win. So when I'm building a list, I try to do checklist. If it's shooting orientated, do I have some melee in there in case, like, there's a windwall caster I totally get shut down?
Sure.
Do I have some way of pathfinder? Like, if there's inhospitable ground, do I have some way around that? What do I do if there's stealth units? And as long as I feel happy into these higher level, like, what do I do against a brick list? What do I do against control? As long as I have an answer in my head for all of those, the list is built. And then I just go play the game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, some matchups I'm not as happy to see as others, but I always feel that I'm happy to play the game. And that's what I look for list building. That's why I say it's not as important as the game itself.
No, I respect what you're saying there. Absolutely. I don't think that a majority of the game is not as binary as, you know, the way that I feel about Windwall into Krios or something like
sure.
that.
And in some points you want to have that. Yeah. Like, that's why I think you build the list in the first place. So you go, I think this build beats a lot of stuff if
it
play
beats a
it,
lot
right?
of stuff.
That's why you're taking
it's not vulnerable to a lot of things.
If you don't think that about your own list, you probably shouldn't be playing the list.
You should play a different caster. Yeah. But like, you know, and that's why control casters are generally very strong. I think Wormwood is extremely strong. Haley 2 is extremely strong. Haley 3 is very, very strong. You know, any TK caster, Exelon Thexis, very strong. And it's because there are less answers to that, the ability to TK stuff or prevent your opponent from having a turn. Like, you can do a lot more stuff in the game. It's hard to account for that.
I don't think it's about mechanical answers, though. Like, it's really about what you can do on the tabletop.
It's a bit of, I think another thing to touch on with list too is floor and ceiling. I actually think the ceiling of a lot of casters, probably over half in the game, are much higher than you ever see in a game of War Machine. Because the time it takes to perfect any one caster takes so long, and people usually give up on the casters that have a high floor. If a caster has like a very punishing result to misplays, they usually aren't played very much after that. Like, if you start playing with a caster for four games and get blown out, you usually stop playing with that caster. Even though if you like stuck with it and found like the perfect positioning, they probably have a pretty high ceiling if you play perfectly. But then there's other casters with a low floor and equally high ceiling, that's why you see Haley 2 or Kane 2 or someone like they're going to be good the first time you play them. They're going to be good the eighth time you play them. Yeah. So that's something to look at too.
Yeah. Well, and you're working in the realm of, I think you're working in the realm of like functioning paradigms at that point. Just things that work, things that get you to the table, things that let you play a game with a minimal number of blowout bad matchups. And I think like as a person who, you know, if you're spending time, a lot of time list building in the dojo, like that's all you need. You know, it's not worth like the amount of energy you should be investing in list building is just getting to that point, and then you go and play and then you reiterate later. Like if you're this dojo smith and you spend all your energy building lists and just, you know, you'll need, you know, just trying to build the perfect list to take you to victory, it's not going to happen. I don't think list building or skill at list building will get you very far on its own in the game.
As a player
yeah. trying to self-improve, almost all of your efforts should be focused on the actual play of the game, and the threshold you actually need to hit with list building is just being able to identify functioning paradigms.
And that's not what I'm not saying, like, you write a list, take a big crap, like, this beats the crap out of everything and you're done, like, don't even need to play the game, I can just head through this. No, I mean, my lists go through these iterations, and you do have to test stuff out and see if it actually plays out the way that you think it does. You know, but once you get to that point where the list is fine-tuned against the things that you think it should be playing into, I do think it is much more of like this, the list is doing the majority of the work, and you just execute what you've already set out in front of you with it.
That's absolutely where I disagree with you. I think it's actually the other way around. Is the list is just there, and what you are doing is it's no longer the list taking the lead. Once you are accustomed to something and it's fine-tuned, you are taking the lead. It's not the list resolving itself against things it's good into, like mechanically executing against your opponent's combos in an effective way. It's you've built a list. It's a functioning paradigm. It doesn't need to be perfect. You just need to get yourself to the point where you are engaging with the list mentally in a way that you're no longer fumbling over how do I execute, you know, is this good, is this bad? You're just looking at your opponent's list and figuring out how you disassemble it with the tools you have. You are at the point where you are now looking at how do I play this differently.
Yeah, like, I use the analogy of like a sports team or a race car. You build a race car to be as fast as possible, but the driver makes a big difference. He needs to know how to drive that car, what its weaknesses and limitations is. And then you're just trying to milk every ounce of power out of that vehicle. And that's how you're going to win a race, because you assume everyone else has a fast car too. Same with a basketball team. Usually the, you know, championship game, each team has talent. It's just who leverages their advantages faster and who has more practice and, you know, is the better practice team.
So I have another case example from the last tournament where I played this Vlad one with a bunch of jacks into Exelon Thexis. And I was playing against an opponent who's really good. He's getting pretty good with it, but he did not play it well at all that game. And he made a ton of mistakes, and there were a ton of things that he didn't do. And he still beat the shit out of me. Like, bad. Like, really bad. And I made some mistakes, but I played very well. And evaluating that, I ultimately had to be like, well, you know, like, what in this game comes down to the list and what's player skill? And it was a stark example, because like, he did not play the list well to its full potential, yet it still stomped mine. And like, there wasn't this magical way of playing that, you know, where I'm taking an alternate path to victory. Like, there wasn't any. There's like 80 dudes on the table and two heavies that out-threat mine and alpha and TK and control, and there's no way for me to assassinate or put that pressure on him. It's just a losing proposition from list building. Like, I cannot play that list into Exelon Thexis.
Well, so here's where I'd come in and talk about the importance of list building. Is I think your Vlad 1 list is a non-functioning paradigm. I don't think it's a list that functions in a way which is robust enough for competition. And anytime you have a functioning paradigm list versus a non-functioning paradigm list, if the functioning one can exploit any of the weaknesses of the non-functioning one, it will fall apart. The non-functioning list paradigm will fall apart and lose every time.
So what you're saying is that from the get-go, my list is crap.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I think that caused you to lose. Once you're in the realm of functioning...
So we didn't even have to play the game. I lost because of my list.
But I think what Alex is saying, if your list was improved, you wouldn't have won the game.
Yeah.
It would have become a game.
Once you're in the realm of functional... two functional list paradigms facing off against each other, there's like... extreme counters sometimes, but for the majority of the time, like, what's in your list, as long as it's a functioning list, it doesn't matter much.
What's like functioning versus non-functioning?
So I'll give some examples of functioning paradigms. Like, your list can struggle to contest, and you need the devastators to keep you live on scenario. The army is also vulnerable to control and movement attack. An example of rewind a bit. Mark II examples, it's easier to talk about this because there was a very settled meta and a lot of, you know, set piece functioning paradigms did emerge. Kruger 2 is the one I go to a lot.
But you said two things. Needs devastators to be relevant on scenario. What was the second thing you said?
I don't remember.
Like, it's vulnerable to control. Basically vulnerable to control and loses on scenario.
If we're going to do a case study, let's do it like this. So the Thexus list was something off the top of my head. It was Thexus, 2 Wreckers, 3 units of Mindbenders, 2 units of Dredges, and Alexia. Your list was Vlad, 2...
And Dion and Hold, too.
Okay.
Let's not forget them.
Your list was Vlad, 2 Devastators, Behemoth... Juggernaut?
I would have to look.
Something like that.
It was like
it was like 5 or 6 heavy jacks,
rifle
right?
Corps and like a bunch of jacks.
Yeah, but your jacks didn't have guns.
No, I was going for like the melee variant.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I think Alex's point is the list wasn't functioning because you couldn't do enough damage to the infantry coming in. And I think you've changed the list to add destroyers and behemoth and other stuff.
Yes.
So if you would have had the extra attacks, you probably kill 12 or so more dredges over the course of those 2 turns and between signs importance.
And still would have lost.
maybe not. I mean, with the destroyers and arcing fire, maybe you kill Alexia sooner so she doesn't get...
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I think our point is if you change the list so you can play into more things, the game starts. I'm not...
Mm-hmm.
You get to the point where it's based on player skill. The point where I think Alex is disagreeing with you is your list will not dictate 100% the outcome of the matchup if both lists are built to where they are good lists.
But see, like, that list didn't do well into Thexus, but it did well into a lot of other stuff. It crushed a lot of other stuff. So, I mean, the list isn't functioning. That just seems like... purely a perspective of the matchup and the other caster and list that you're going into, which is done in the dojo.
It's theory, but it's also diversity.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Is it good into a wide range of things?
Right, and that's just as important.
It's that robustness and having a lot of not auto losses, and just once you're in that territory of...
What are auto losses?
I think your case example is a good one. Like,
I think it's an auto loss. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I was list building, I would say I'm not happy into this and many other things. I think it would also struggle against like Rhett, Sentinel spam, or anything with too many dudes. Like,
yeah. And
so
and
you changed the list.
And that was my expectation. I'm like, huh. I don't expect to see a Mark II Scar 1 level dude spam lists. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to see
jokes on
that.
You.
That's jokes on me. List. Yeah. First game, 3 flags.
Sad,
boom.
Sad times for Vlad.
Yeah, good times.
And I think like, that's really my point. Like, I'm not saying list building isn't important. I think it is important. It's just, it's an on or off type thing where player skill is always the struggle. That's the game. Like,
I almost won that game. Like, I almost won that game.
And even with
but I shouldn't have.
Even with a bad list, if you're much better than the other player, you have a chance. So
I am not arguing with that whatsoever. Yeah. But I feel like that's an irresponsible thing. If I'm trying to win at the highest level of competition, I feel like that's...
You want to take the best list.
That's a sentiment that is unreliable. And I mean, like, okay, I'm going to build things such that I hope my opponent is worse than I am, because that's how I'm going to eke out some wins.
Well, I think the difference is
that's a last resort.
Your opponent will always make a mistake. It's like chess. In chess, list building isn't determined at all. You can't do anything about your list. I would love to take all queens, queens OP, but you can't.
Queens OP.
Like, it's really just playing against your opponent. And that's what you're aspiring to in War Machine, mm-hmm. is getting a list that you know you can play into just about anything.
Yeah.
Or a list pair.
Do the best that you can
to give yourself the best chance to win. But you still have to sit down on the board and beat your opponent. In chess, someone always makes a mistake. It's just how the game works. It's going to be the same thing in War Machine. You'll get to a point where someone makes a mistake. Now, with uneven lists, someone has a much easier time of doing that than the other. But you're never out of the game.
Right. Only I think the only way it's possible to have somebody beat at the list building level is like there's a couple of rare exceptions where you bring something that's really a genuine counter to what they're doing, like a control vulnerable caster. The only way to have someone beat at list selection level or at list building level is if that person is playing a bad list. I don't think it's possible in the game of War Machine to build yourself a list that you can ride to victory all the way, because there's no list that's going to be so optimal that you don't have to just sit down and play a game.
No, you must execute.
It's not just execute. Like you will have to enter a tactical exchange with an opponent. It's not just. There's no list with a standard default plan, I don't think, anymore that's so powerful that all you have to do is sit there and execute. That was what Bradagus was pre-Shifting Stones nerf, but...
And those happen sometimes. There are lists that are so good.
Yeah. But then...
But then you should be playing that.
Right. Yeah, then list building ceases to matter. The metagame is solved. You're in a mono build meta, and it's just playing that game and that list and a limited selection of hard counters, and that's what the shape of the game becomes. It was that way for a couple of months with World War.
Hey, look, I'll just tell you, yesterday I slapped some Fury and Strength of the Bear on some Rifle Corps, and they went in on some Jacks and like tore it up. That happens occasionally. I've also run them out as chaff, you know? Like these don't matter in this game, so how am I going to get value out of them?
Sure, and that's
like,
playing differently.
That's playing differently. Yeah. It is. That does happen, but
yeah, I think in list building, the way I look at it personally is I want to avoid as many hard counters as I can.
Yes,
mm-hmm. There's nothing I don't think you can do unless there's a caster that's just broken. Like Body and Soul came to mind, or Haley 2 in her heyday, or Lich 2. There were some things that break this rule, but what you're striving for is to only have soft counters. And think about those soft counters, and what do you do to mitigate that?
I think this goes back to some fundamental differences in maybe how we approach the game, which we touched on in our discussion about mid-range lists versus, you know, more rock, paper, scissor types, where, I think your approach is more you want a soft counter to, you want options and the ability to play into a bunch of stuff. Whereas my approach is more, I want to crush a ton of things. And then I accept that with that, I'm going to lose really bad to a few things. And those few things, I'm going to hopefully not run into them.
Yeah. And that's a strategy. And
I don't think it's a hugely viable strategy in War Machine, because those crushing, you know, one way matchups. Because, at least largely because of the two list thing, it's not reliable to get those. Like, they don't, as games you will realize playing War Machine, you know, you and your opponent both select your list and you play, you know, whatever's least bad for you. I don't think that a lot of those style of games are actually realizable, of the crushing one-sided matchups dictated at list selection, unless somebody's list is bad.
Hmm. I also see a lot of matchups as like crushingly in my favor. Like Ryan and I had a game with Haley 2, and it was the first time I played Butcher 3. And like, I think that, and you can just confirm, you think you have a chip in a chair. Like, I think it's very average, actually. I think it's crushingly bad for you. I think that as I play it more, like, it's just gonna, you'll never play her into me. Like, just because of a couple models. Like, if you take Ornn Midwinter, can a control caster win against certain other casters?
Yeah,
and it becomes very difficult.
So I will say this, I think Ornn we're both in a good OP. Place. What you want in list building is you're no longer thinking about what you would scrap and build a new caster.
Yeah.
You're thinking about what tools you have,
mm-hmm.
and how to beat that caster.
Yes.
And the fact that we both think we're in a good position is exactly where both of us should be in list building. Like,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Like, and that's all you need to do for list building. Like, right. If you get, as soon as you get to the point where you're like, I think I can play this into just about anything, but I may need to tweak this. Yeah. You should ride that caster until someone proves it to you and goes, no, dude, you just lose to this. See? Ta-da.
Yeah.
And then you go, uh-oh, maybe I need to think about my pair, or maybe, but until that happens and you've really gone through all the cycles, just stick with it and become better at that list, because yeah. War Machine, I feel, has so much more to do with playing a particular list in odd ways that people don't see, or milking every advantage that you can about what you have way more than what you bring. Because every time you start with a new caster is a completely new learning curve. Even in totally faction, is. Playing Kane 1 is drastically different than Kane 2. And outsiders will look at that and go, what are you talking about?
Why would you ever do that? Yeah.
Like, Kane 2 is just better. But no, like,
Kane 1 has snipe.
And thunder shots. And
knocked it. Yeah,
and teleport. Right. He can play a hit and run game where Kane 2 can't. Like, they're just a completely different caster. It's like not even close.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Alex, this is your baby. All right. So what else do you have to say about it?
I guess my beef here is that list building is seen as very important by a lot of people because it's completely under their control and it is easiest to work on. List building is the single factor that's easiest to work on because it's 100% in your control. I don't think it's the most important factor in the game. And just putting that out there.
Maybe,
you know.
Maybe this is a let me give you guys an example. I played three games yesterday. So yesterday was the Virus 2, and I played Butcher 1 Gunline into him once, and then I played my Vlad 1 list with all the shooting stuff into him another two times. And there were a couple games where, like, lost on stupid shit. I'm like, oh, you could, I didn't realize you could sidestep off of the objective, or I just didn't think about it. So, like, I should have died to assassination with that. So, like, oh, okay. Like, regardless of who wins that match in the dojo, like, I would have lost, even if I think Vlad 1's crushing into Virus 2. Another one, like, he moved Virus 2 too close, and I assassinated him on the top of 1, you know, with three boosted bombards and signs of importance. Like, does that really matter? Like, no, not really. Like, it could happen in a tournament, but that's not, that doesn't have anything to do with the matchup. Yep. But here's something concrete that did come up, is that I took out some of the fluff in the some of the guns in the list that were less important to actually add one Devastator to it. Because what I found was the list has an absurd amount of shooting output, but the scenario pressure is such that it is going to lose on scenario. Even if I devastate a lot of your forces, it doesn't have the ability to both shoot and contest some of the scenarios like boobs or incursion. So that was a change that I think will make the list stronger in general. And now makes it into like a really, really good matchup now against more stuff.
So I want to spin around, and because I think that's probably the place you want to be at with building lists and refining lists and how you're playing and thinking about things. I want to spin around and look at what Adam's doing, because he's trying like onesie twosie games with casters with some pretty radically different builds, trying to hone in on what he's going to play. But like, we rag on Joe for this all the time, not playing anything for long enough. And just skipping around too much, not building up experience, unless he's got like some like, you know, Takaguchi method or something like that for rapid testing of various configurations. Like, unless he's doing something weird like that, you know, he's getting individual data points on lists that maybe don't mean anything and aren't giving him a lot of insight into how to play these lists. I think he's in a list building frenzy, but I don't think it's going to serve him well. Like, the best thing for him is to just pick two casters, whatever, play them hell or high water, and then revise the experience, you know, shows. But it takes more than a single data point of a game.
Yeah, I find that's when a player's in their worst spot is when they're on list ADD.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen it with many players in various metas, but the ones that are like kind of in the middle of the pack wanting to get good, but they're... And this isn't a reflection of...
I don't think this is Adam. No. He's not in the middle of the pack.
I'm just saying, as a personal perspective and seeing other players do it, because I had this happen with Trolls a lot, where every day I would be like, oh yeah, it's going to be Magic 2 and Jarl. Oh no, it's going to be Runes and Gunbjorn. No, it's going to be Gristle 1 and Jarl. No, it's going to be Gristle 1 and Madrak. Like, and just in this constant recursion loop, and every time I lost a game, I totally scrapped the caster and changed my pair and reposition everything. And that's the worst place you want to be, You don't even know how you're using those lists anymore, and you don't know what you're not thinking about your opponent. You're only thinking about yourself. And then every time you move a model, you're like, ugh, I wish this was a X instead of a Y.
Yeah.
and you're not thinking about how to actually win the game or what your opponent's doing. You're only thinking about your list and how it works,
right,
and what it's even doing it with itself and how the machine operates.
Well,
you
don't even know
how to use it.
I'm gonna lay a little criticism at both of you, actually, in that this is a new edition, and I do only see you playing a couple of casters that you were playing in the last edition. And I think that's doing a general disservice to, like, some stuff that you might find that is absurdly powerful in the new edition.
I actually swapped from Haley 1 to Haley 2. I wasn't playing. I played 4 games of Haley 2 in Mark 2.
I'm back to Sorsha 1. I'm in that iteration phase of, like, prove it to me. Prove that it's not still the best.
I mean, have you played, like, the Zerkova 2 with the double cavalry? Like, the absurd balls-to-the-wall assassination? Is that good? I don't know. Is that broken? Like, is Harkovich better with the reposition? I mean, do you run him with Colossals?
I would say I honestly don't care until I start losing with Sorsha 1 enough to make me care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if there's a better list because I'm not better with it.
Right. That's the important thing about functioning paradigms, too, is, like, I could go out and discover other functioning paradigms, but I've got two functioning lists that are really robust and competitively solid into a wide array of things. And, like, what do I need another functioning paradigm for? I have one that works, and I'll keep using it and getting better at it until I find that it doesn't work.
Okay, I mean, that's cool, but
knowing a bunch of different functioning paradigms doesn't do me any, you know, except as possibly an opponent, doesn't do me any good if I can only field two.
And the other way, too, like, the new hotness right now is Wyrmwood. I could go out and start running Wyrmwood because everyone's saying it's a great list, but I wouldn't play it as well as the things I'm playing now. And is it really genuinely better than the things I'm playing now? Hard to say.
I guess
if you're running functioning lists, like, the variance in War Machine is so close that you don't need to go chasing the new hotness necessarily.
Look, like,
you just need to be asking yourself the question, does this work?
I'm just saying, like, you don't know what you don't know. You think Kane 2 is absurdly powerful, but what if there's something that is better than him
He's absurdly powerful. I think he's just a good list that will let me win more than I lose, and that's why I play him right now. I think I can win more with Kane 2, Haley 2 right now because I've practiced the list and I know how they run than other things in Signar. And it's not like I'm not looking at things in Signar. Like, I have Striker 1, Striker 2, Striker 3 lists. I have a Nemo 3 list. So I have Sloan on deck. Like, there's things that I constantly think about to see about things
good.
I'm worried about, and are there counters? And in my head, there's a constant balancing act of, like, Premier League soccer. There's these, like, minor league teams. Are they going to hit to the big leagues and knock someone out? That happens all the time. Like, I'm thinking about War Machine, but there would have to be something drastic for me to change my pair. I'm not gonna break down my pair every time I play a game and see something I don't like unless I'm convinced that I couldn't have done anything in my play to fix it.
I guess I'm sticking up for Adam a little bit in that, like, I think he does have list ADD, but I do understand him going through and trying to find something that works for him.
Oh, no, like, and I'm not knocking this at all. If you don't have your pair set, that's what you have to do. And
you gotta do it.
Yeah.
I'm just
saying
it's not the place you want to be at.
Yeah.
Like, you want to have your list building done. Like, list building is step one to a tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to have your pairs built and know what they're doing and how to play them. So you can play.
Yeah.
Like, you can't change your lists in a tournament. You can't change them when you're going to a national tournament. So that should be the first thing that's done, and it's either on or off. So that's why I'm saying, like, list building is only so important, because after a while, it's set and you can't change it. In my own personal outlook, it's much more important to focus on your play and your positioning and thinking about strategy with your list, because that's what's going to make you better than other good players at a tournament. Like, so say Vlad 1, Windwall, and Krios 1 is a bad matchup for Krios. The Krios 1 player who wins the tournament compared to the Vlad 1 player who wins the tournament is the Krios player who's thought about that, knows what to do, and the Vlad 1 player who hasn't thought about Krios 1 because they're like, oh, my list is just going to crush this, and don't think about the things that he could do to counter his play. That's when it comes down to eking out these odd wins, because that happens in a 6-round tournament all the time.
Like, I guess I just never factor that in. I say if two perfect beings who made no mistakes played my lists in a tournament against everything else that I expect in the field, like, what would come out on top and what are the deciding factors for that.
Then shouldn't you build your list to always have a 50-50 matchup? Because if you think the lists are always going to either
win or lose. No, that seems terrible.
Okay, but then you always run into the random chance of losing the tournament just by what someone brought.
Yep.
Yeah, that goes into my overall philosophy that I don't like mid-range. I think you should take lists that crush certain matchups, and then you accept that you will lose to certain other outlier, hopefully, and you make an assessment of what you expect to see.
That's our difference of opinion. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think wrong on this. Sometimes, you know, I never played into Bradagus, not even a single time ever during Mark II, but I did spend a significant amount of time thinking about him.
Yeah, and as bad as everyone said he was, pre-nerf I played him in with Ruins of War, which I always thought was a great drop, and it was, that no one really talked about. Like, between Rampager and Range 8 knockdown AoEs and other and trolls being trolls and like walls, it was one of the few things that I thought had a chance against pre-nerf Bradagus. And then post-nerf Bradagus, you could flank him. In any bad matchup, there's things you can do to win the one game. You don't have to win 100 games against that bad matchup. You just have to do it once.
Right. So, and I think that is something you should be good at doing. But it does require, okay, you might have to accept, okay, my only out to win this game is that my caster does have tough. He can't remove tough. So I need to go dominate the zone and survive the assassination and make two runner-runner. Like, he's going to have enough to kill me, and I'm going to have to make two runner-runner tough checks. And if I do that, I win. And then, like, you're going to get that game, whatever that percentage of the time is. So, like, that's fine. But I would just rather not have to run into that match. And if I do, sucks. But like, oh, am I going to run into that? What's the probability of it?
What Ryan's trying to get at is, like, it's all about realizable games. Like, if you try and build for these really binary crushing matchups, like, you're not going to realize them all the time. What you're going to realize is your opponent is also attempting to plan around, like, hard counters like that. So what you're actually going to realize is a lot of more or less even games where, like, if somebody's favored, it's usually by one game in five, not, you know, not three games in five.
I don't see it that way.
There is
I mean, but look at the actual games you play. Unless you or the other person is running a bad list, most games you play in a tournament are going to be pretty close to even.
I mean, I a lot of this philosophy comes from my Magic the Gathering experience, and, you know, just as far as, like, what is going to get you the most success at a tournament based on what you can expect in the meta. And if you make a correct meta read, you're going to have a deck that crushes, or you play mid-range, and I don't really think that's great, but you're going to have a deck that crushes, you know, what you expect in the meta, and you're going to hit that the most, then you're going to have a good day.
I mean,
you know? And it doesn't mean that they don't beat you occasionally. There's still some random chance and misplays and stuff like that, but...
Well, you know. So a couple of observations on Magic. While you do have a sideboard, one, you only have one deck, and you can't sideboard in the first round, or at least I don't think you can.
No, you never do in your first game.
So that is such a big difference between Magic and War Machine that really, you know, like your philosophy is definitely 100% correct in that environment, but in War Machine, you are going to be playing a lot more even games. Two, War Machine has a significantly broader meta than Magic does. Magic, at any given block, usually has between two and three sort of top decks or, like, power decks, and then, like, variations on them and a couple of, like, you know, layered down counters.
Correct.
The meta is significantly more predictable in that regard. The power stratification is fairly obvious. You can't do that in War Machine. Like, you know, in Magic the Gathering, those, we'll call them... I'm thinking of them like functional list paradigms. There's like two to three functional list paradigms that fight in a particular way. In a small contracted meta in War Machine, like as the game really matures or between release cycles or a long scenario year like 2015 where it starts to settle, you're down to like the smallest it contracts to is maybe 10 to two dozen paradigms that function and, like, distinct ways of playing. And because you're two-listing it, you can't approach it in the same way that you do Magic.
See,
I think I've started to come around to your philosophy that targeting mid-range is not exactly optimal, but you won't... I don't think you'll actually realize games, you know, commonly besides ones that are fairly closely matched, like games between non-counters.
I guess that, too, when I say meta considerations, I'm really only considering... Because, like, I look at my pairing, and the casters are of a high enough caliber that they're just going to be, like, Kane 2. I feel that
they're just going to beat bad lists.
They're just going to beat bad lists, and they're going to beat lists with cloud walls. So, like, he's really only worried about this certain demographic of S-tier casters or A or whatever you think he is. Mm-hmm. He's really, it's a much, you know, he's not worried about the full 150 casters or whatever there is.
Yeah, now. Yeah, you don't worry about
it. And I think that's what you should be building your list to.
Right.
Yeah. Like, because the other thing with counters is they're not equitable. If you're soft countered by someone, you may hard counter them, so it's fine. This happens with Haley 2 a lot. Mm-hmm. Or Lich 2 was the perfect example, or Braddock. People were building this weird Haley 2 double Stormwall, or like weird Nis Hunter builds to like build against Braddock to like soft counter him.
Yeah.
And he still kind of just really killed.
He doesn't really care.
He still really killed the other army sometimes, so it was bad. It was sure. Like. So there, I would agree with you in that point. I don't think it exists now, or I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a list that is just degenerate, like Body and Soul or Braddock.
There is. It's Kane 2.
I hope so. But if there's that out, there's a strong case for making that your list because it's the best list that you can play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's much more important to master your list. Like, I think player skill outweighs list construction. I think it's easy to perfect your list. I think it's very, very difficult in War Machine to perfect the player.
Yeah.
Even very good players do not have perfect games.
Yep.
Like, right. There's always an out. So that's the way I look at it. And that's the way it's different than... I mean, I'm not an expert Magic player to say this with certainty, and there's still skill in Magic.
Mm-hmm.
But there's less times for it to matter.
Yeah.
Like, there's
Go ahead.
I don't know. I think it's easier to make a mistake in War Machine than it is to make a mistake in Magic. Hmm. There's just more pieces on the table and very inexact positioning that you're looking at.
We're going to get a lot of hate for that. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I think that they're totally complex systems.
I'll add, playing a lot of Hearthstone, I would say, yeah, there is a lot of room for skill in games like Hearthstone or Magic, but it's of a different kind, and errors in execution or play look different, but in War Machine, it's a lot easier to make them. Yeah. The other thing I would add is you get to the perfecting the list, it's pretty easy to get to a finished good list. To get to a great or perfect list takes a crap load more effort than building
a lot of games.
Well, not just a lot of games. Like, it takes way more effort and insight than building a perfect variation on a deck in Magic. And second, if you spend all that effort getting to a perfect deck, like, or a perfect list, it's not even as good as improving as a player, like getting from a good player to a better player. Like, going from a good list to a perfect list makes less of a difference than progressing an ordinary play skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, working on your play is really good. But I can't control how good my opponents are going to be. So, like,
yeah, you can. It's called winning.
Well, yeah, but I don't rely on that. I don't factor in my opponent's mistakes into any of my thinking. I just think that's not a good way to plan.
Well, yeah, it's not good to plan for your opponent to, you know, to do something stupid, but it's also bad learning if you assume everything they did was right or perfect. It's usually not.
No, but that's learning, but my point is that you're doing a lot of this work in the dojo. Like the list thing. But I don't know. I feel like we're rehashing it now.
Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah, this feels like really strong. I don't feel... I feel my powers... I feel I've said everything that I need to say.
Sure. Cases have been made.
Yeah, my case has been made. I know we're not going to agree on it. Yeah. And that's cool. You know?
So we'll just sort of release this one into the wild then.
Yeah. And hopefully the listeners have enjoyed this. You know, it's a lot to think about. And I don't think your perspective is wrong, and I don't think that I'm right. I think in a lot of ways... Like, we're probably saying the same thing, but I just have a different approach to
it. I think it's just our focus is different.
Yeah. Like, we had a very meaningful conversation over text the other night about, you know, some of this stuff. And just trying to understand other people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? For sure.
Yeah. You're wrong. No. No. I don't.
I wish my eye roll was audible over microphone. Yeah. If I roll my eyes hard enough, right, I'm sure you can hear it.
Right. And, let me just crank the game.
And ultimately, I'm, you know, as much as I want to be consistent, I'm willing to, you know, the proof is in the pudding. And, you know, if my tournament results suck, over the next couple of years, then maybe I got to think about, you know, changing some of my point of view and my philosophy.
Well, yeah, I think that's really what, I think that's why I'm in the middle too, is the way I look at it. Is I want to improve everything and question everything. That's why lists, I think, are just the anchor to start the game for me. That's why I don't put as much focus on them as playing. Because, I mean, your list is set after a certain point, but I can always improve my play.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel there's much more room to improve myself mm-hmm. than to improve the models that I'm taking.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com.